For several days, the wagons rolled steadily north toward Wyoming, covering the ground at a nice pace now that they were on the plains again with the Rocky Mountains looming off to the left. Matt continued scouting ahead of the wagon train with Smoke and Preacher serving as outriders. They were alert for any sign of trouble, and they made sure that the camps were well guarded at night. Dieter was still alive. His fever had broken after a couple of days, thanks to luck and Erica's gentle ministrations. While he was still extremely weak, he was awake part of the time now and was able to eat a little. Smoke was confident that the young man would start to get his strength back soon. The first night that Dieter was coherent enough to know what was going on, Smoke sat in the Baron's wagon with him and told him what had happened 3 nights earlier.
I don't think there is any doubt you saved the wagon train.
You and Preacher would have stopped Berger and his men.
I don't know about that. When you stood up and started blazing away at them, you wrecked their plans and kept them from starting more fires than we ever could have put out. It was like something out of one of those dime novels you read, the way you yelled at them to eat hot lead.
I said that? I really don't remember much about what happened.
You said it all right, and I think you ventilated several of the varmints, too. Nobody could have done any better than you did, Dieter.
I was willing to die to save Erica and the others.
Erica's fine. She's been taking care of you since we brought you in.
I know. When I first woke, I thought I was in heaven, because there was an angel looking down at me.
You be sure and tell her that.
Oh, I cannot. It is not permitted. The Baron would think...
Sooner or later, you need to realize that what the Baron thinks isn't important as it used to be. Like we keep telling you, Dieter, you're in America now. We don't have barons and counts and dukes and such.
The Baron will always be the Baron, no matter where he is.
Smoke didn't argue with the young man. Dieter would either come around to the American way of thinking or he wouldn't. In the end, the choice was up to him.
Matt and Preacher, they are all right?
They're fine. None of us were hit while we were swapping bullets with Berger's bunch. Did you overhear enough before the fight started to know if Klaus was with them?
No. There was a man giving orders, but no one used any names.
I don't guess it really matters.
One of the men I heard, I would know his voice again. It was high-pitched, but it had a sound to it. I never heard anything quite like it before. It was the sound of evil.
Klaus Berger, all right. Smoke would have bet a hat on it.
You've probably talked enough, son. You just rest now. You can take it easy because you know you did good.
Thank you, Herr Jensen. Smoke, that means a great deal, coming from a man such as yourself.
Dieter's eyes slipped closed. His bandaged chest rose and fell steadily as sleep claimed him. Smoke went to the back of the wagon and stepped down from the tailgate. From the corner of his eye, he saw movement in the shadows just on the other side of the wagon. As he pivoted quickly and smoothly in that direction, his hand went to the butt of his Colt.
It's just us, Smoke.
Matt stepped out of the shadows with Erica beside him. Smoke didn't ask what they'd been doing in the dark. He didn't really want to know.
How is Dieter?
He's asleep now. He talked for a little while, but I could tell he was getting pretty tired. So I told him to go ahead and get some rest.
That's good. Rest is what he needs more than anything else now.
You could probably use some rest yourself. The way you've been taking care of him, you must be worn out.
Oh, I am tired. Good night, Matt.
Erica reached out and squeezed Matt's arm. He patted her hand. His eyes followed her as she climbed into the wagon and disappeared behind the canvas flap.
I'm glad that Dieter's doing better. For a while there, it looked like he might not make it.
That's true. Erica's a good nurse. You want to take a turn on guard duty tonight?
Sure. I'll ride the circuit for a spell.
Smoke glanced at the night sky, his attention attracted by a flicker of lightning far off in the distance.
Better make sure you've got your slicker with you. Looks like it might rain after a while.
And rain it did, in buckets. The lightning was what made Matt and the other guards abandon their patrol around the wagon camp. On these plains, a man on horseback ran a real danger of being struck by one of the bolts, since his head was higher than most of his surroundings. Once lightning began striking in the vicinity, the riders headed for the wagons. As Matt was unsaddling his horse, Smoke and Preacher came up to him. Both of them wore slickers and carried their Winchesters under the oilcloth garment.
See anything out there before the storm started?
Not a thing, except a lot of empty prairie.
Smoke pointed to one of the wagons.
That belongs to the blacksmith, whose family has always worked for the Von Hoffman family. He volunteered to let you bunk on the floor of his wagon tonight. I already put your war bag in there. Go get some dry clothes on and get some rest. Preacher and I and a few other men are standing guard here in the camp. Nobody's going to be able to start a prairie fire in this weather.
That's the truth. Thanks, Smoke.
Matt started toward the blacksmith's wagon. Matt, Smoke, and Preacher had been sleeping under various wagons since joining the group of immigrants. That was fine, as long as the weather was halfway decent. Matt had gotten many a good night's sleep on the ground. When he reached the wagon, he climbed onto the seat and wrapped his knuckles on the frame.
Howdy in there.
Having announced himself, Matt pushed the canvas flap aside. He had seen a light glowing through the wagon's canvas cover, so he wasn't surprised to see the vehicle's occupants sitting on the bunk reading a book by the glow from a lantern. The man lifted his eyes from the pages.
Come in there, Jensen. Vigates. I mean, how are you?
Wet and tired. You got the advantage of me.
Eh? Oh, you mean I know your name, but you do not know mine. Rudolf Wolf, mein Herr. A pleasure to meet you.
The man stood up as much as he could inside the wagon and extended a big hand. Rudolf Wolf wasn't very tall. He was built like a lot of blacksmiths, broad and powerful, with massive shoulders and brawny arms. At first glance, he looked fierce, with a rumpled thatch of dark hair and a bristling beard. But he had a quick grin. Matt felt an instinctive liking for the man. They talked while he put on dry clothes.
Thanks for your hospitality. In a storm like this, when the ground turns to mud, it sure is nice to have a place to get out of the weather.
I'm glad to have you here, Herr Jensen. You and your friends have done a great deal to help us.
Well, we want to see you folks get to Wyoming and settle down to your new lives there. The West needs fine new settlers like you. It'll be a chance for all of you to live a whole new sort of life.
I do not know if things will change all that much, whether we are in Wyoming or Germany. The Baron will still be the Baron.
There's no need for you to feel like that. He may have more money, but around these parts, he can't tell you what to do any more than any man you work for can.
So you say, Jensen. But when we get there and you and your friends go back to where you came from, nothing will change. I should not be saying these things. You and the Baron are friends as well.
Not so as you'd notice. Don't worry about me repeating anything you might say to me. As far as I'm concerned, that's nobody's business.
I hope you are telling the truth. Otherwise, the Baron may be angry with me.
And you wouldn't like that?
Baron von Hoffman is a hard man. He comes from a long line of men accustomed to being the absolute rulers of their domain. When something happens to displease him, or when someone opposes his will, he can act harshly at times.
Well, you don't have to worry. I'm not all that fond of the Baron either. I don't like the way he lords it over that cousin of his.
Fraulein von Hoffman is a lovely young woman, but she has no will of her own. The Baron rules her with an iron hand, just as he does everyone else.
If he tries to keep that up here, he's in for a rude awakening. Americans may put up with it for a while because we're good-hearted enough to give just about anybody the benefit of the doubt at first. But if somebody tries to push folks in this country around, sooner or later we'll dig in our heels and let the hombre know that we won't put up with it anymore. And if the varmint keeps it up anyway, well, he might just be in for a whooping.
This is a good thing to hear, Herr Jensen. I believe I may like it in your country after all.
Rainwater ran in steady streams from the brim of Smoke's hat as he walked around the camp. He had spent plenty of wet nights on the trail, so it didn't particularly bother him. At least it wasn't cold to boot. The downpour also meant that campfires weren't possible, so everyone had a cold supper. And the only lights came from candles or lanterns inside the wagons. Most of the vehicles were dark, though. After a long day on the trail, people were worn out and ready to sleep. Smoke, Preacher, and four other men were walking their patrol around the wagons, spread out so they could cover the whole camp fairly well. Smoke knew that no one expected any trouble on a night such as this, and that just made him even more wary than usual. If he knew that the immigrants might let down their guard because of the storm, then Klaus Berger was probably aware of it too. Smoke knew he didn't have to worry about Preacher, but he had tried to impress on the other sentries that they had to remain alert at all times. Smoke had ventured about 20 yards outside the circle of wagons, walking along with the mud sucking at his boots, when his right foot struck something. The yielding nature of it warned him right away what it might be. He took a quick step back and slid his rifle from under his slicker. Dropping into a crouch, he waited for his chance. Lightning struck again, revealing just what Smoke expected to see. One of the guards lay on the ground, face turned to the sky so that the hard rain washed away the blood welling from the gaping wound in his neck. His throat had been cut so deeply it had almost decapitated him. That meant his killer was probably inside the circle of wagons already. Smoke turned and dashed toward the camp, leaping over a wagon tongue. He caught a flare of light in the corner of his eye. It came from underneath one of the wagons. Smoke whirled in that direction in time to see a man holding the match he had just struck to a length of fuse attached to a stick of dynamite. Smoke brought the Winchester to his shoulder. The man who had crawled under the wagon dropped the dynamite. The fuse sputtered out as the explosive cylinder landed in a puddle of mud and rainwater. The man must have clawed a revolver from its holster, though. Muzzle flame stabbed from underneath the wagon where the man lay. With the thunder and the heavy rain, Smoke didn't know how close that bullet had come to him, but he was not about to take a chance on that man getting off another shot. The muzzle flashes came from outside the circle of wagons. Smoke figured that Klaus Berger's hired gunman must have crept up on the camp from the cover of the storm. Smoke started running along the circled wagons, peering underneath all of them. He felt the heat of the bullet against his cheek as he dived off his feet. Rolling over in the mud, he stopped on his belly and fired under the wagon where the shot had originated. As lightning flashed again, he saw a man in a slicker going over backwards under the impact of the rifle slug. But as darkness dropped down again, Smoke saw sparks shooting from a lit fuse. He came up on his knees, drove himself forward with his feet, and slid through the slick mud, winding up underneath the wagon, where a stick of dynamite was wedged into the vehicle's undercarriage out of the rain and the mud. The fuse was burning fast. Only a couple inches of it were left. Smoke reached up and plucked the dynamite loose. He threw it toward the open prairie, where Berger's men continued to fire at the wagons. The rain didn't have time to put out the fuse before the dynamite went off. Smoke hoped that the blast had caught some of Berger's men and not Preacher or one of the other guards. As it turned out, he didn't have to worry about Preacher.
Stay in your wagons and keep your heads down. Fire at any muzzle flashes you see outside the camp.
As usual, Preacher had kept his wits about him. At the sound of the first shots inside the camp, he had come running. Now he was here to help with the defense of the wagons. Smoke crawled behind one of the wagon wheels. It would give him a little cover. In the glare of the next lightning strike, he saw several men running toward the camp, and he almost opened fire on him before he recognized him as the other three guards. They were caught in a bad spot and just wanted to get back to the wagon. One man stumbled and clawed at his back. Smoke knew he'd been shot. The lightning flash faded before Smoke could see the man fall. Smoke coolly fired again and again at the muzzle flashes he saw out on the plains. His own muzzle flashes drew the fire of Berger's men. Bullets thudded into the body of the wagon, ricocheted off the iron rim of the wheel, and kicked up splashes of mud near him. He didn't let any of that keep him from fighting back.
Smoke! Under here!
A moment later, Matt and Preacher both crawled under the wagon with him.
Are you two all right?
Other than being soaked and covered with mud again, you mean? Yeah, I'm fine. But this isn't nearly as pleasant as sitting inside a dry wagon.
Yeah, well, you nearly knocked me down and trampled me when you come jumping out of that wagon, you big lummox. And if you ain't noticed, Smoke and me are soaked and covered with mud, too.
Better than having your throat cut, like the guard I found out there. I figure Berger's men killed him, but then a couple of them slipped into camp with some dynamite.
I thought that sounded like dynamite going off a minute ago. There ain't any more of that hellish stuff around, is there?
I don't know for sure, but if there was, I think we would have heard it explode by now.
The immigrants were mounting a stiff defense now, pulling up the canvas on the outward facing sides of the wagons and firing at Berger's force. Smoke, Matt, and Preacher continued shooting from under the wagon where they had taken cover, and their superb reflexes and natural gun skill enabled them to catch sight of a hired killer, and they targeted him. They brought him down before the flash from a lightning strike faded. The three kept up this deadly counterattack for several minutes. Another bolt of electrical fire clawed down from the heavens and revealed the dozen or so riders on horseback fleeing across the prairie, putting distance between themselves and the wagon camp.
Yee-haw! The varmints are taking off!
Let's make sure they don't dawdle.
Smoke finished reloading his Winchester and resumed firing in the direction the attackers were fleeing. Matt and Preacher joined in, sending a barrage of lead after the hired gunman.
I sure hope to hell that dang Claus fella's done for this time.
I wouldn't count on it. Hombres like him seem to be able to dodge most bullets.
Yeah, well, one of them's gonna have his name on it sooner or later.
They climbed out from under the wagon to find out just how much damage Berger had done this time. Several men had been wounded in this latest battle, but only two had been killed. The guard, whose throat had been cut, and the one Smoke had seen shot in the back as the man tried to reach the safety of the wagons. The lone dynamite blast had been far enough away from the wagons that it hadn't damaged any of the vehicles. The two men who had tried to set off the dynamite underneath the wagons were both dead, as were three more men who had been left behind when the attackers fled. All five of them were typical hard cases, hired guns who would kill anybody if the price was right. The two immigrants were given a proper burial, but the bodies of the gunmen were dumped in some tall grass and left for the wolves when the wagons pulled out the next morning. The storm was over by dawn, which broke with a clearing sky and bright sun that sent the temperature climbing rapidly and made the still, damp air muggy and miserable. Not only that, but the ground was a sea of mud. That made the going very slow, and people grew impatient and irritable. By midday, the wagon train had covered only a little more than a mile. On several occasions, one of the wagons had bogged down and refused to budge, and a team from one of the other wagons had the time-consuming ordeal of pulling it loose. So when Smoke and Preacher trotted in from their outrider positions, Smoke sought out Friedrich von Hoffman.
It might be better just to call a halt for today and let the ground dry out more before you start up again.
That will mean wasting at least half a day.
Yes, but what you're doing is wearing out those oxen while not covering much ground. You'll be delayed more in the long run by pushing on now. Let the stock rest this afternoon, and maybe by tomorrow morning the ground won't be so muddy.
What you say makes sense, Herr Jensen. I will pass the word that we are stopping for the day and making camp.
That'll give Matt Preacher and me a chance to do a little hunting. I reckon we could all use some fresh meat.
What sort of game is to be found out here?
I thought you'd been on hunting expeditions before, Baron.
Oh, I have, but it's been several years. I've been told that the buffalo are all gone now.
No, they're not gone. Although most of the herds have drifted on down to the Texas Panhandle, the demand for hides isn't as high as it used to be. And since they finished the Transcontinental Railroad, nobody hunts buffalo for meat anymore except the Indians. For a while there, it looked like all the herds might be wiped out. But now, I think the buffalo will survive. It'll never be like it once was, though.
I will come with you.
What?
I will come with you on your hunt. You'll find that I'm an excellent shot.
I don't doubt that, Baron, but...
I need a fresh mount. It won't take me long to have another horse saddled.
While Von Hoffman tended to getting a fresh horse, Smoke walked over to Matt and Preacher.
The Baron went along with the idea of stopping and letting the ground dry out before the wagon train moves on.
It'll be a lot easier that way.
He thought it was a good idea for us to do some hunting, too. The thing is... he wants to come with us.
The Baron? That dang stuffed-shirt aristocrat?
Yep.
Well, I don't reckon you told him he couldn't.
Didn't seem worth the effort.
We'll see about that when he scares off all the game betwixt here and the Canadian border.
Smoke didn't think it would be quite that bad, but he supposed they would have to wait and see. Von Hoffman came over to him a few minutes later, leading a leggy chestnut gelding. Smoke was an excellent judge of horse flesh, and the chestnut looked like a fine animal.
Ready to go, gentlemen?
Yeah, we're ready.
The four men mounted up, and as they rode out of camp, they passed the wagon where Greta Schiller sat on the seat while her driver unhitched the team. She smiled at him, but the full force of the expression was directed at Von Hoffman. The attractive widow seemed to have her sights set on the Baron now, and that was just fine with Smoke. They'd probably make a good match, since they'd been acquainted with each other for quite a while and came from the same sort of background.
I told some men to stand guard while we were gone.
That's a good idea. I don't think Berger is going to attack in broad daylight. We've whittled down his forces enough that he can't afford to come at you head on right now. But you can't ever be sure what somebody else is going to do, especially a hired killer like Berger.
I agree. We must still be careful.
We won't get too far away from the camp. That way we can get back there in a hurry if we need to.
They rode north, which allowed them to scout the trail the wagon train would be taken when the journey to Wyoming resumed, while at the same time they were searching for game. After they had gone a mile or so, Smoke held up a hand to signal a halt. The wagons were out of sight over the rolling hills behind them. As far as the four riders could tell from looking around, they might as well have been the only men for 100 miles around.
Some antelope over yonder.
Yeah, I seen them too.
Von Hoffman stood up in his stirrups and craned his neck as he peered in the direction Smoke had pointed.
Well, I don't see them.
Look just to the right of that little bluff. They're grazing there.
Von Hoffman reached into his saddlebags, pulled out a telescope, and had a look.
You must have extraordinary vision, all of you. The antelope are there, just as you said.
Well, we wouldn't have no reason to lie about it.
It's not a matter of vision as much as it is training your eyes to look over long distances. Out here, it's good if you can see danger coming while it's still as far off as possible.
Yes, I understand. What do we do now? Approach them with stealth?
If you mean sneak up on them, yeah, that's the idea.
We ought to be able to get pretty close. The wind's blowing right to carry our scent away from them.
They heeled their horses into motion and rode toward the ridge near where the small herd of antelope was grazing. If each of them could bring down an antelope, there'd be plenty of fresh meat for the wagon train. When they were a couple of 100 yards away from the herd, Smoke reined in.
We'll take our shots here. You'll probably only get one, Baron. As soon as they hear our rifles, they'll take off, and there may not be time to try again.
I understand. And if you're worried that I'll miss, don't be. At this range, my aim will be true.
The four men swung down from their saddles and drew their Winchesters. The antelope were in range of the repeaters. Von Hoffman laid the barrel of his rifle across his saddle to steady the weapon while he took aim. Smoke, Matt, and Preacher did likewise with their horses.
Everybody got your bead?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
All right. Steady now. We'll fire on three. One, two, three.
Preacher and Matt immediately stepped away from their horses, jacked a second round into their rifles, and fired again at the swiftly running antelope, all of which had taken off at top speed. The two of them threw several rounds after the animals, but Smoke didn't see any more of the antelope fall, or even falter.
I must have seen 1,000 of them varmints over the years, and I still can't get over how blame fast they are.
Looks like we got 4 of them. That's good shooting, boys.
Indeed it was. At that range, it wouldn't have been surprising if 1 or 2 of the shots had missed. Instead, it looked like all 4 of the hunters had been successful. Or at least partially successful. Smoke and his companions mounted up and rode toward the ridge. 3 of the antelope lay motionless in death, but 1 was still kicking and struggling to get up. It was only wounded. Smoke knew which one it was, too. The Baron was the man who had failed to make a clean kill. From the dark, angry glower on his face, Von Hoffman was aware of that as well.
Well, at least he's going to take care of it himself, instead of leaving it to us to do it for him like we're his servants.
You don't like that old boy much, do you?
I don't like the way everybody else in that wagon train is scared of him. You know there's got to be a reason for it. They wouldn't all feel that way.
Von Hoffman rode up to the wounded antelope and aimed down at it from the saddle. It took 2 shots before the animal was finally out of its misery. The Baron turned to look at Smoke, Matt, and Preacher with an unearned expression of triumph on his face. By this time, however, the 3 frontiersmen had reined in and were looking up at the top of the bluff beyond Von Hoffman. Several dozen riders in buckskins and feathers had appeared there with no warning, and now they sat on the backs of their ponies, gazing down at the white men.
Uh-oh. Company.
Cheyenne, you think?
Could be. Maybe Pawnee.
There's a bunch of them, whoever they are.
Doesn't matter. All the tribes in this area are at peace.
Well, right now they are, as far as you know. I don't mean something ain't happened to put them on the warpath. That bunch don't appear to be painted for war, though. Reckon they probably just heard the shooting and came to see what was going on.
So as long as we all keep our heads...
including the Baron.
We'll probably keep our hair.
That would be my guess. We'd better tell Von Hoffman to stay calm.
But it was too late for that. Seeing that they were looking past him at the bluff, the Baron suddenly turned to peer up at the rim and did the worst thing he could have done. Smoke sent his horse plunging forward at top speed. He saw dirt fly from the face of the bluff near the top as Von Hoffman's hurried shot missed the Indians. The Baron worked his rifle's lever, but before he could fire again, Smoke left his saddle in a diving tackle that sent him crashing into the man from behind. Von Hoffman's rifle flew from his hands as Smoke's weight drove him to the ground. Smoke pushed himself up on 1 knee.
Stay down, damn it!
Smoke didn't have to worry about that. The impact had knocked all the air out of Von Hoffman's lungs, and all the Baron could do was lie there unable to move. When Smoke looked up, he saw that several of the warriors had crowded forward to the very edge of the bluff. They pointed rifles down at him. Making sure that his hands were in plain sight, he raised his arms to show the Indians that he wasn't making any threatening moves. A glance over his shoulder told him that Matt and Preacher were still mounted. They had drawn their rifles, but they didn't have the weapons pointed at the Indians.
That blasted foreigner's got us all killed!
Maybe not. Since the Baron missed and they didn't start shooting back at us right away, maybe they'll be willing to listen to reason.
Keeping his hands lifted, Smoke got to his feet. The bluff was about 30 feet tall, so the Indians were well within hearing distance. Now that he had gotten a better look at the decorations on their buckskins and the way they wore their hair, Smoke was sure they were Pawnee. That was a good thing, since the Pawnee were slightly less warlike than the Cheyenne, at least these days.
My name is Smoke Jensen. I would talk with your chief so that I can apologize to him for the mistake made by my companion.
The warriors on the rim pointing their rifles at him didn't budge, except that 2 of them moved aside slightly to let another rider come forward. This man was older, Smoke saw, with a stern, weathered face.
I know you, Smoke Jensen. It is said you helped the Paiutes save their land from greedy white men not long ago.
That's true. near the settlement known as Helltown.
The spokesman for the warriors raised an arm and pointed at Matt and Preacher.
The old man is the one known as Ghost Killer.
And I answered other names, too.
And the young one is Matt Jensen.
That's right. We're all friends to the Indians, as long as they're friends to us.
And who is the dog at your feet? The one who tries to kill the Pawnee for no reason.
How dare that savage call me a dog? I'll teach him to respect
you. You'll stay on the ground unless you want to get us all killed, blast it.
This is unforgivable.
No, it would be unforgivable for us to get ourselves killed for no good reason. Now just keep your mouth shut.
This man is a stranger to our land and knows little of our ways. When he saw the warriors of the Pawnee, he was afraid and acted without thinking. I ask you to forgive him.
If he was a better shot, you would all be dead now.
Don't I know it?
Stay there. I would speak with you.
Fine.
All right, Baron. Get up and go back to your horse. Leave your rifle. We'll get it later if all goes well.
This is intolerable. I will not be treated like this, Jensen.
I know you're a smart man, Baron. Keep your mouth shut and do what I tell you, and maybe we'll all come out of this alive.
Von Hoffman looked like he wanted to argue some more. But after a moment, he turned and stalked toward Matt and Preacher without saying anything else. Smoke stayed where he was, with several of the Indians watching him while the Pawnee chief and some of the other warriors rode to a spot where they could descend the ridge. Upon their approach, the chief dismounted and regarded Smoke gravely.
I am called Bone Striker. I lead this band of Pawnee.
Something has happened, hasn't it, Bone Striker? That's why you and your warriors are away from your village.
We are hunting men.
Not us. We have done no harm to the Pawnee.
Then why are you here?
We're traveling to Wyoming with a group of settlers, immigrants. They're camped south of here with their wagons.
A wagon train? Few white men travel in wagons anymore, since the Iron Horse goes so many places.
I know, but these are. And they've been pursued by enemies, which makes them nervous. That's why the Baron took a shot at you.
The Baron is a foolish man. These enemies you speak of, is one of them a man as pale as the moon?
A man with pale skin and long pale hair and very dark eyes?
That is the man.
You've seen him?
He and some other men came upon a small group of my people. They murdered the warriors, then dishonored the women and female children before killing them as well. They thought they had murdered all the young men, but one of them lived long enough to tell us what happened when we found them. Since then, we have been looking for these men without success.
They were probably moving pretty fast. I'm surprised they stopped long enough to harm your people. After everything that had happened, Berger probably wanted to keep his men from getting too impatient with him. He still needs them.
I do not understand.
These are our enemies too, Chief. They've been pursuing us, but now they ride ahead of us because we defeated them. They probably intend to regroup and attack the wagon train later.
These are very bad men.
I know. The Baron, the man who shot at you by mistake, is their biggest enemy. That means he and the Pawnee should be good friends.
This is true. I forgive the Baron for his mistake, but tell him not to shoot at the Pawnee again.
You can count on that, Bone Striker. Not only that, but I give you my word that if we find the Pale Man and his companions, we will avenge the deaths of your people.
It is known throughout the land that Smoke Jensen is a man of his word. We will be friends.
We will be friends.
Your wagons may pass unharmed through Pawnee land.
Thank you.
You and Matt Jensen and the old man called Preacher will come to our village. We will smoke and feast. Bring the one you call the Baron with you.
We'll be there.
The Baron was still upset when Smoke rejoined him, Matt, and Preacher after the Pawnee had ridden off.
I demand an apology, Jensen.
Well, you're not going to get one. I'll be damned if I'm going to apologize for saving your life.
Maybe you're the one that ought to be apologizing.
Oh, don't make it worse. Listen, Baron. Bone Striker, that's the Pawnee chief, has invited the four of us to come to their village this evening. I told him we would.
Ride into the camp of those savages so they can murder us? I think not.
If they wanted us dead, we wouldn't still be breathing. They could have massacred us a dozen times over without any trouble.
Anyway, most Indians are hospitable sorts. You ride into their villages, they'll welcome you, they'll feed you to make you feel at home. Of course, they might kill you when it comes time for you to leave if they're mine too, but, well, I guess I ain't helping him a smoke.
Bone Striker considers us friends now, because we're enemies with Klaus Berger.
What does Berger have to do with this?
He and his men came across a small band of Pawnee and attacked them. They killed the men, raped and murdered the women, and even killed the children. One of the youngsters they left for dead lived a while, though, and he was able to tell the warriors who found them what happened and described Berger. So Bone Striker and his men are out hunting for him.
Too bad they didn't find him. A war party that big would have wiped out Berger and his bunch.
Yeah, but Berger probably had them moving pretty fast again once they finished with the Pawnee.
I fail to see what any of this has to do with me.
There's an old saying about how the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's how Bone Striker feels about you now, Baron. Even though you shot at him. Which he's still not happy about, by the way. But he's willing to forgive and forget. Especially since I told him that if we found Berger, we would avenge the deaths of his people.
I have sufficient reasons of my own for wanting to see Klaus Berger dead. And they don't include placating some feathered savage.
Dead's dead, no matter what the reason. Let's just leave it at that. But we still need to go to Bone Striker's village and sit down to powwow with him. It's the smart thing to do.
How will we know how to find the camp?
He told me where it is. It won't be hard to find. We'll dress out those antelope, take the meat back to the wagons, let the folks there know what's going on.
What if Berger attacks while we're gone?
That's not likely. After what happened with those Pawnee, probably the last thing Berger wants to do is double back. He'll keep going north so he and his bunch can put some distance between themselves and the Indians.
I suppose you're right. I must clean up. I wouldn't visit even savages looking like this.
Let's get busy. We don't want any of that meat to spoil.
The wagons were in a circle, the teams were unhitched, and everyone had settled in at the camp by the time Smoke, Matt, Preacher, and Von Hoffman returned. Von Hoffman disappeared into the wagon he shared with his cousin. Even though the ground was muddy, there was enough dry brush around to fuel several fires. So some of the women got busy cooking the meat the four men had brought back with them.
When we heard shots, we knew you must have found some game.
We found more than that. Or rather, they found us.
They?
Pawnee War Party.
Wild Indians? Like in the books Dita reads?
Not exactly. The Baron took a shot at them, but he missed. Lucky for us, the Pawnee were willing to listen to reason and accept our apology. It turns out they had a run-in with Klaus Berger, too, and were out searching for him.
Is there no end to the evil this man Klaus can do?
Not so far, doesn't seem like, but there will be. Justice always catches up to buzzards like that sooner or later.
I can only pray that you're right, Matt.
In the meantime, the three of us and the Baron are going to the Pawnee village for supper tonight. The chief invited us, and it didn't seem like a good idea to turn him down.
Really? I cannot imagine Friedrich sitting down to eat with savages.
To the Indians, we're the savages. I reckon most of them has got good reason to feel that way, too.
You won't let anything happen to him, will you? He is all I have left in the world.
He'll be fine, as long as he doesn't do anything foolish.
From the look on Erica's face, she might be starting to think that was asking a lot of her cousin. Later that afternoon, the four men set out for the Pawnee village. Von Hoffman had cleaned up and put on fresh clothes. He was still dressed for riding, but he had added a cravat to his outfit. He also buckled on a revolver. As long as he didn't plan on using it, that shouldn't matter. Smoke was going to keep a close eye on the Baron the whole time they were in the Pawnee village anyway. After riding for several miles in a northwesterly direction, they came to a small creek. Following Bone Striker's directions, they followed the creek for a few miles. Then they came to the village. It consisted of about 50 teepees scattered along both banks of the creek. The four white men approached, and the dog's commotion drew the attention of the village inhabitants. The warriors gathered to welcome the riders, with the women and children behind them watching in rapt attention. Smoke glanced over at Von Hoffman. The Baron's face was set in taut, stern lines, but Smoke could tell the man was nervous. Von Hoffman had never seen this many Indians at one time before. Even though he never would have admitted it, his attitudes toward the frontier and its inhabitants had probably been shaped by the popular image fostered in those dime novels, just like Dieter's. Not to the same extent, since Von Hoffman had visited America before, but some of the feelings were still there. The Baron wouldn't be able to see an Indian without worrying at least a little that his scalp was in danger. but as long as he didn't do anything foolish, that didn't matter. The four riders reined in. Smoke clasped wrists with Bone Striker.
Thank you for inviting us to your village, Chief.
Come to my lodge. We will eat and talk of our enemies.
For Smoke, Mad, and Preacher, it was nothing new to sit cross-legged in a teepee and eat stew from wooden bowls with their fingers, using pieces of fry bread to mop up all the juices. Von Hoffman was visibly less comfortable with the procedure, but he didn't say anything. And he even managed to nod with at least a semblance of enthusiasm when Bone Striker asked him if he liked the food. After they had eaten, they smoked a pipe, passing it from hand to hand. Smoke quietly told the Baron what to do, and Von Hoffman followed his instructions. So far, so good.
Tell me of this pale man. Is he an evil spirit come to life in the form of a man?
That is a good description of him, Chief. He works for political enemies of mine, and he will stop at nothing to carry out their schemes of vengeance.
I do not understand this political enemies. All I know about are enemies. What sort are these?
Not understanding politics is something you got in common with most folks, Bone Striker. I don't reckon anybody really understands a dad blasted stuff.
It has to do with who has power in the government and who decides how to make the laws.
Only the Great Spirit makes laws.
What about the government in Washington?
They say things, but what they say has little to do with us. When it rains, the ground is wet. When the wind blows in the winter, it is cold. These are laws. What men say, they are only words, easily blown away by the wind or washed away by the rain.
The pale man's name is Klaus Berger. He and his men have attacked the Baron's wagon train 3 times and killed some of the Baron's people.
Baron is like Chief.
Yes, you could say that. In fact, I rather like the comparison.
Every time Berger's men attacked us, we killed some of them, too. More of them than they killed of our people. They aren't strong enough anymore to keep on attacking us. So I think they've left this part of the country for now.
But they will come back.
Probably not here. Berger will have to hire more men. The closest place for him to do that is Cheyenne.
We cannot pursue him that far. The deaths of our people will go unavenged.
No, because sooner or later Berger will attack the Baron's people again. And when he does, we'll deal with them. Like I told you this afternoon. When we kill him, it will be for all the people he has ever harmed.
And I have your word on this.
You do.
Bone Striker looked at the others. Madden Preacher nodded.
I swear a solemn oath to you, Chief, that we will avenge your people as well as our own.
This is not as good as killing him ourselves, but as long as this man Berger dies, I will accept it. And in return, I promise you and your wagons safe passage through the land of the Pawnee.
We have struck a bargain.
We smoke again to seal it.
By the time the four white men were ready to leave and ride back to the wagon camp, Von Hoffman had finally relaxed. Smoke was glad to see it. Whenever the Baron took that stick out of his backside, he seemed to be a pretty decent hombre. Given his history, he might not ever fully adapt to the frontier, but at least there was some hope of that happening. They said their goodbyes and rode out of the Pawnee village. Night had fallen, but Smoke knew he would have no trouble following the stars back to the camp.
That went well, did it not?
It did. You did good by promising to avenge Bone Striker's people.
A promise to a savage means nothing. I want Berger dead for my own reasons.
That just showed how different he and the Baron were, and always would be. He had given his word to Bone Striker, too, and he intended to keep it. Because to Smoke Jensen, his word meant just about everything. A hard wind sprang up overnight, and that helped to dry out the ground. By morning, the wagons were able to move out, with their wheels rolling much easier. By the next day, the situation was even better, and the miles began to fall behind the wagon train. Day followed day, with Smoke, Matt, and Preacher alternating the scouting duties. The storm and the various troubles the immigrants had encountered had slowed down the wagon train to a certain extent, so by the time a week had passed since leaving the Sugarloaf, they hadn't yet reached their destination, but a few more days should be enough to complete the journey. As they rode side by side, Smoke pointed out the dim gray shapes on the northern horizon to Von Hoffman.
See those mountains in the distance? Those are the Medicine Bows. From what you told me, that's where your new ranch is located.
I have a map the previous owner sent to me. The Rafter 9 is near a small settlement called Hawk Creek Station.
I think I've heard of it, but I don't reckon I've ever been there. I thought you told me there wasn't a town nearby, and so you planned on starting one.
This Hawk Creek Station does not amount to much, as you might say. There is a trading post and tavern there, but that's all.
It was probably a stop on the stage line at one time, and that's how the place got its name.
I want a real town. It will be called New Holtzburg, after the town where I was born.
New Holtzburg, Wyoming. Doesn't really have the same sort of ring as Laramie or Cheyenne, but I reckon you've got the right to call it whatever you want if you're the one starting it up.
The wagon train continued on its way. Supplies were starting to run a little low, but it would have been out of the way to visit any nearby towns, not to mention it would increase the chances of them running into Klaus Berger and more of the man's hired killers. Smoke still thought it would be smart to get to the Rafter 9 ranch and dig in there while they waited for the next attack. Dieter was strong enough now that he was able to sit up inside the wagon. Sometimes he even rode on the seat next to the driver for short periods of time while Erica was inside the vehicle. Dieter was upset that he had missed the chance to see the Pawnee village, telling Preacher one day as the old mountain man rode alongside the wagon.
That may be my only opportunity to become acquainted with some of the noble red men of the plains.
Well, I thought you was worried all the Injuns wanted the scalp.
Well, it is true that they are fearsome warriors, but they also possess a great deal of dignity and nobility.
Some of them do, but some of them are just low-down, good-for-nothing skunks who are dumber than dirt and nastier than snakes.
I thought you were a friend to the Indians, and yet you talk of them this way?
Some of them, I said. Just like there are some white men who are low-down, good-for-nothing skunks who... Well, I mean, you get the idea. Now, I know white men, red men, black men, brown men, and yellow men. And I've never run into a dang one of them you could say had to be a certain way just because of what color he was. Now, that's what some folks just can't seem to understand. There's good and bad amongst all kinds.
I suppose that's true.
Don't get me started.
Things were still a little tense between Dieter and Matt. Matt hadn't been able to spend much time with Erica because she'd been busy taking care of Dieter. Smoke figured both young men were wasting their time worrying about Erica. Her cousin was never going to allow either one of them to court her seriously, let alone marry her. And it seemed doubtful that Erica would ever develop enough backbone to stand up to the Baron. From time to time, the wagon train had passed an isolated farm or ranch, but southern Wyoming was desolate country and difficult to wrest a living from. Those were the only signs of human habitation. But as they neared the foothills of the Medicine Bow Mountains, 11 days after leaving the Sugarloaf, Matt came riding back in from his scouting position in front of the wagons.
That trading post the Baron talked about is only a couple miles ahead of us.
Did you ride in and talk to anybody?
Nope. When I saw the place, I turned around and let the rest of you know. It's not abandoned, though, I can tell you that. I got close enough to see smoke coming from the chimney.
Civilization.
Calling it that might be a stretch, but it's as close as you'll find in these parts, I reckon.
Matt and I will ride ahead and get the lay of the land. Preacher, you can bring the wagons in the rest of the way.
You're worried that fella Klaus might be laying in wait for us, ain't you?
It's possible. It wouldn't hurt to take a quick look around first.
Well, then I should come with you, too.
I think it would be better for you to stay with the wagons, Baron. Now that we're this close, we don't want anything else happening.
As you wish, Herr Jensen.
Matt pointed out the exact direction to Hawk Creek Station.
Not that you could miss it, sticking up from the prairie the way it does. It's a two-story building. It looks to be the only building of any sort for miles around.
Matt and Smoke left the wagon train behind and rode toward the trading post. When the place came into view, Smoke saw that Matt was right. It was hard to miss that big, ugly building with a corral out back. Half a dozen horses were tied to a couple of hitch racks in front of the trading post. A buggy was parked nearby.
Place appears to be doing some business.
I'm not surprised. Where else around here are you going to get supplies or a drink?
What about women?
Wouldn't surprise me a bit. The proprietor's got to make some use of those upstairs rooms.
There were some single men among the immigrants, and they would probably welcome the chance to guzzle down some booze and take a soiled dove upstairs. In those respects, Germans were like every other nationality. After the long, dangerous journey they had had, Smoke didn't have any objection to the fellas cutting loose a little. But Baron von Hoffman might. If he tried to put the pleasures Hawk Creek Station had to offer off limits, he might have a riot on his hands. But they'd crossed that bridge when they came to it. That was one reason he and Matt had ridden ahead of the wagons like this, to find out exactly what sort of situation was waiting for the immigrants. The trading post had a low porch with several chairs on it. Two of those chairs were occupied by men passing a jug back and forth. Smoke's eyes studied the men as he rode up, and he knew Matt was doing the same thing. Men such as them, men who all too often lived by their guns, couldn't ever afford to let down their guard. The man on the left wore a buffalo coat despite the heat. Lank black hair hung from under his hat, which had a flat brim and a round crown. An equally dark mustache drooped over his wide mouth, the corners of which turned down in what appeared to be a perpetually sour expression. The other man, in contrast, wore a broad grin on his freckled, sunburned face. His hat was thumbed back on faded red hair. Smoke recognized both of them. The man in the buffalo coat was Tyrone Wilkes. Some said he was from Canada. He'd killed a dozen men in the Dakotas and Montana. The redhead was Con Wheeler, from Texas originally. But he had made his reputation in the New Mexico Range Wars. And the reputation was that of a cold-blooded back shooter.
Looky here, Tyrone. We got strangers coming into town.
I see him. Don't give a damn.
I think you better give a damn. That there's Smoke Jensen. I don't know who the other one is, but if he's riding with Jensen, chances are he's pretty gun-handy too.
Howdy, boys. This is Hawk Creek Station, isn't it?
It surely is. What brings you fellas here, Jensen?
Reckon that's our business.
Maybe he don't know who we are.
Oh, I know who you are. I recognized both of you.
Then the only one who's got an advantage here is that fella beside you.
My name's Matt Jensen.
Matt Jensen. Matt Jensen, his own self. I've heard of you, Matt. They say you're pretty near as fast on the draw as old Smoke there. Is that true?
I don't bother worrying about such things.
Well, we do. It plumb annoys Tyrone and me when we hear folks talking about the Jensens and how fast they are. Yes, sir, them damn Jensens are just faster than greased lightning, everybody says. Makes me want to puke. You know why?
Because the two of you think you're faster than us, when all you really are is just road agent trash.
Wheeler and Wilkes both glared furiously. Wheeler came up out of his chair like a striking snake. Wilkes was only a fraction of a second behind him, sweeping the buffalo coat aside so he could reach for the low-slung gun on his hip. Both men cleared their holsters. But before they could get off a shot, Smoke's Colt drove two slugs into Wilkes' chest, knocking him backwards to the porch. Simultaneously, Matt fired. Con Wheeler's dead body pitched forward on his face. Smoke and Matt swung their guns toward the front door as several men rushed out. They stopped abruptly when they saw that they were covered by the two grim-faced riders. One of them, a barrel-chested man, glared at Smoke and Matt.
What the hell? Shit! Damn it! You killed Con and Tyrone!
They drew on us.
These fellas are pretty fast, Yancey. Because Con and Tyrone were damn slick on the draw.
Who are you?
The older one, Smoke Jensen. Somebody pointed him out to me down in Taos a couple of years ago. The man with him is his brother, Matt.
We got no quarrel with you, Jensen, either of you.
You don't want to settle the score for your friends?
I don't recollect seeing a Wheeler and Wilkes were my friends. We rode together, that's all. Not for very long, neither.
Another man stepped out of the door of the trading post just in time to hear this.
I thought you all rode for the brand, Yancey.
We do, Mr. Kane, but I ain't in the mood to get killed because a couple of hotheads decided to brace Smoke and Matt Jensen. In case you ain't noticed, they got the drop on us.
The man called Kane studied Smoke and Matt speculatively. He was below medium height, but built like a tree stump, broad and hard to budge. The fabric of his brown tweed suit coat bulged with ridges of muscles along his shoulders and arms. His derby hat was pushed back to reveal a mostly bald head.
My name is Jethro Kane. Those two men you just killed rode for my spread.
Faster than them. They drew on us. A man does that, he's got to expect the other fella to fight back.
I suppose so. Did either of them even get a shot off?
No, but they cleared leather.
Your name's Jensen?
That's right.
Are you looking for work?
That's Smoke Jensen, Mr. Kane. He's not a hired gun. Fact is, I've heard that he's got a ranch of his own down in Colorado.
Is that so? What brings you up here Wyoming way, Jensen?
We rode along with the wagon train that was bound in this direction. Wanted to make sure it got where it was going safely.
A wagon train? Bound for here?
That's right.
Why the hell are a bunch of immigrants coming here? This is ranching country. We don't need a bunch of damn sodbusters around here.
And no offense, but you don't strike me as a Western man.
I'm from New York originally. What's that got to do with anything? I'm a rancher now. The Boxed JK is my spread.
The hombre leading the wagon train is going to be a rancher, too. He bought the Rafter 9.
The Rafter 9, eh? Has this gen ever seen the place?
I don't think so.
Then the damn fool bought a pig in a poke. The Rafter 9 failed years ago when a bad winter killed off the cattle its owner was running on it. He tried to build it back up, but bad luck did him in. The place is cursed.
It's got a hoodoo on it. Bad water, not enough graze. A man who tries to make a go of it is bound to fail.
I reckon we'll have to see the place for ourselves.
Don't let me stop you, but I'd appreciate it if you'd put those guns away. You're starting to make me nervous. Nobody else is going to try to draw on you or bother you in any other way.
Smoke and Matt pouched their irons.
What about your spread, Kane? Is it as bad as you make the Rafter 9 out to be?
Of course not. I have several good springs and plenty of grass. The Rafter 9 has water holes that have dried up and taken the graze with them. Sorry about offering you a job a minute ago, Jensen. I didn't know you were a cattleman, too. That was pretty nice of you coming along with those pilgrims. Too bad it was a waste of everybody's time.
We don't know that.
Oh, but we do. There's no chance in hell anybody's going to make a success of the Rafter 9, especially not a bunch of wet-behind-the-ears pilgrims.
Boss, you reckon we ought to get Wilkes and Wheeler out of here?
Put them over their saddles and take them back to the ranch. You can bury them there.
Yes, sir.
Yancey motioned for his companions to give him a hand.
Come inside and let me buy you boys a drink.
Thanks, but we need to get back to the wagon train.
Yeah, somebody needs to break the news to those folks that they came all this way for nothing. So long.
Smoke and Matt sat their saddles until Kane had gone to the buggy, climbed into it, and driven off to the north using the whip on the two horses pulling the vehicle. Yancey and the two men with him followed on horseback, leading the two horses carrying the bodies of Tyrone Wilkes and Con Wheeler.
I don't like those fellas, especially that hombre Kane.
Neither do I. Let's go inside.
Thought we were heading back to the wagon train.
Preacher can guide the wagons here. I want to talk to whoever these other horses belong to.
Smoke had already checked out their brands. One of the horses, still tied at the hitch rack, carried a Double Diamond brand. The other two had 7B4 burned into their hides.
Seven before? Before what, I wonder?
No telling.